Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Get a gun.
Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slamfire Radio, episode 562 for July 3rd, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Adriel.
I'm another host, Kyle.
I'm Justin.
And Justin's on as a guest host tonight, which means you get to do all the stuff, right? We just stand around just add like just little comments here and there, just little quips. We're the peanut gallery in the background.
Dave's not here, so
Dave, someone's got to do it. Someone's got to put the smart ass comments in. I'll take his stead. I think I can do that. Why don't we get into what we did in guns? Kyle, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So we were supposed to have the multi-gun match here locally on Saturday, but Crystal and I got there and only one other guy showed up. So we decided at about 8:30 that we were going to call it because we weren't going to go set up four stages for three of us to go shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we ended up calling that.
So that's like a Tuesday night fun shoot kind of a thing?
It ends up being half to three quarters of the day. Like it's your local single day three gun match basically. So I mean, it's not like we put off a bunch of stuff on the day. We just, started the day early, and when everyone was thinking about getting out of bed is when we called it. So
do your events on the weekends sell out a little bit better?
Well, that was the Saturday match.
Oh, that was Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was Saturday morning. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's odd.
Yeah. Well, three gun hasn't been in the area, so we're just kind of trying to build it up right now. And it seems like there's interest. Now we just got to get advertising more, and I think you got to do some more with the Facebook page, like maybe post up. So I'm actually open to options on how to grow that, because last time I was kind of growing something someplace. There was already something established in the area for people to, and they were really wanting Grand Prairie to amp up our stuff. Mm-hmm. So
this one is more. How big's your club, like in terms of membership?
Oh, it's low. It's low this year. It was low last year. Like, it's basically like we're starting last year. It was like the club was starting from scratch, right from nothing, because the basically resurrecting the club from pretty much being shut down.
Hmm.
So it's basically starting everything from scratch. Our pistol matches, we're getting about 20 people out to the pistol matches, and that seems to be growing. We get new people. It seems like we get new people all the time. It's just trying to get,
Are there any more popular clubs nearby?
There's like no three gun in the area. The closest that I've seen is like Albuquerque. There's a couple clubs that do three
shooting
gun
ranges. Any other popular shooting ranges nearby?
Oh yeah, like there's Hobbs shoots. That's hour and a half away from here.
I would ask the admin of that group, hey, we got these events. Can I advertise just the events on your thing? It's close enough. Some of your members might like to go to it. Because the easiest place to get people to come out to these things would be from the shooting range. And if your local shooting range is just starting out, well, you can't use that. So you might as well use like the nearby ones and try to advertise on some of those.
Yeah.
Advertise on their Facebook pages when your events come up, and then just say like, oh, and if you have any events, I'd be happy to share those as well. Just make sure it's reciprocal. And
yeah, when I remember, I post on the New Mexico competitive shooter page. Roswell actually doesn't have a Facebook page. They advertise their stuff on ours. which I have zero issue with. Like there's a reason why we made it a community page, and it seems like I'm usually the only one posting on there. But And it's funny because you know that there's people interested because, hey, Sunday? No, it was just the other day. Somebody commented, so it was a few days afterwards, someone commented, hey, I haven't seen scores from the multi-gun match.
Yeah,
they've been posted or whatever. Well, you're interested. Come out. Like, there's only one other person, so we called it. Like, but, yeah, we'll keep working with that and try and get that going. Another thing, I was checking out carry laws for my trip up to Minnesota for multi-gun nationals because, I'm going through these trips, and I've just got tent and everything put on the truck, so we're going to be doing some camping on the way up, and so I was like, I'm going to be spending some time in some states. Better check it out. So I'm good. It's constitutional carry. Once I leave New Mexico, I'm constitutional carry all the way up until I get to Minnesota. Minnesota is permit carry. It doesn't even look like there's open carry there, which is fine because I wouldn't open carry anyways. But we got to look into the non-resident carry permit for them.
Mm-hmm.
In looking, and I typically use just for their general carry laws, I use the USCCA maps. They have the reciprocity. I can never say that word. Maps. And so they'll break down all their gun laws. And one thing in there for Minnesota, and it really bums me out, is that you can't use, it states you cannot use metal penetrating rounds while committing a crime. You know, Full metal jacket, hollow points, you're fine. Just not AP rounds when you're committing a crime. So thought that was kind of.
I bet that's because they wanted to make it illegal, but they couldn't. But they wanted to still do something.
Yeah, it's just baffling because it's just well committing a crime. So that to me, that means okay, so I can still have AP rounds, go shoot them at the range or whatever, as long as you're not committing a crime. but I gotta look into that. And I summertime concealed carry can be a challenge, so I'm trying a different method of carrying, and there is a bit of controversy, arguments, there's definitely some opinions about it, but I have joined the bandwagon and I brought bringing back the fanny pack. So this is from Vertex, and so yeah, there's a Taurus, and I picked up, Vertex has this this holster, and it's, they call it Tactigami, and it's just a bunch of like Velcro pieces, and you fold it up around the gun, and it seems really well thought out, solid enough that the trigger is not going to get activated.
Unless it's a P320.
Well, yeah. No. And the trigger being activated. Didn't mention the firing pin. they have this little kind of lock piece that actually goes on your ejection port, but I found it was tight. Too tight, on there. So I'm testing it out. As far as draw goes, actually, it seems really simple to train it. And get your draw down, get the pouch opened, and get the draw down. So, I mean, instead of lifting up your shirt, you're just pulling a tab. And so,
it's looks quick. So, as long as you can grab that string under like extreme stress.
Yeah. So what I did, like they make it both handed. So I took the string off the one zipper pull. Mm-hmm. And left just the one. So when I reach down, I'm just grabbing one string. I don't have to fumble around to see
you're not which. Unzipping and re-zipping it like in rapid speed.
yeah. And it's nice because it doesn't matter my shorts or anything. I can have wallet and I usually have keys in there and that. So yeah, I've been trying that out and actually I like it. It's comfortable and yeah. And with this, you can also wear it a sling as well, like almost like a sling bag.
I think they call that a merce, right?
that they might, yeah. But yeah, so you could just.
That's the more trendy way of doing that thing by far.
Yeah. And you still nice quick. I just getting in there from up here would definitely would take more practice. But I do have like a kind of Kydex Velcro backed Kydex holster coming from Crossbreed, but they take like a month to get stuff out, so it'll be a while before I see that. But yeah, so trying out different carry style, and so far I am, I'm liking it. But cool. That is it for me this week. How about you, Justin? What you get up to?
Since I was on last time and it didn't actually work, I've been really busy. I took 7 coworkers to the range. Most of them was their first time ever. So I had 2 friends help, and we spent like, I don't know, at least 2 hours there. I brought a ton of handguns and some rifles and shotguns. And of course, everybody loved it. So hopefully some people buy some or get some pals. And then I shot a couple of IFSC matches that weekend to test out my new skills after training with Ben Stoker. And then the following weekend, my wife and I took out her friend's daughter who wants to be a police officer. She had never shot a gun. So we took her out for a couple hours and got her to shoot every handgun I have. And then her D and I went to Michigan to shoot a 3-gun match, just a monthly. And that was the Michigan matches are always a ton of fun. And then, I guess last weekend I shot IFSC Provincials.
Hmm.
Pistol Pit Provincials.
But like which province?
Oh, Ontario, sorry.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
So yeah, Ontario Provincials. I ended up 16th in production. So wow. Pretty happy with that. Out of, I think it was 100 competitors.
Hmm, nice.
So pretty happy with that. And then I whipped down to Michigan again to do another 3-gun match on Saturday night for the Sunday match. And then I think that's about it now. Other than I did get my IDPA national jersey in. So you have to wear some sort of cover garment for IDPA. So I decided to go with pictures of my dogs. gotta stand out as much as possible.
Nice.
If I got to wear a cover garment, it's got to be cool.
that's a much better alternative to the fishing vest.
Well, apparently with the fishing vest too, there can't be any mesh. And it got too confusing. So I'll just get one with my dog's faces on it.
Well, I've seen like Nils when he goes, he wears like the fishing vest, but he's got the back cut out so that the Canuck logo on his jersey is fully visible in that.
But, Yeah, exactly. So that's in, I think, 2 weeks. That's in Peterborough. So I got, and then I've got IFSC Nationals in Peterborough 2 weeks after that. So it's going to be another busy month.
Cool.
Yeah.
What are those? Go ahead, Adriel.
Oh, after the show, we got to find out where you had that jersey made.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
What are those Michigan 3-gun matches like?
Oh, they're awesome. So, like, it's just your typical monthly match. So, usually it's $30 for non-members to the range. And there's, like, so there's 2 in Livingston County. So, like, about an hour and a half from the Sarnia border. And then there's a bunch around there as well. So I go to a bunch of different ones, but 3-5 stages, usually round counts about 100 of each. And you usually start either 9 or 10 o'clock and you run till like 3 or 4 o'clock. Usually there's 5 full squads of like 12 people. It's usually pretty full.
Nice.
And it's typical like US rules with, 2 on paper, 1 in the A zone. That kind of stuff. A little bit different than in Ontario.
Are they like lots of bush runs, bays, open terrain? Like
most of them are bays. Especially Livingston, they only have a 200-yard bay, like one of them. So it's a lot of close, fast shooting. A couple of the other ones, Saginaw has a bigger bay, but most of them are max 200 yards.
Oh, okay.
A couple jungle runs sometimes.
just shotgun juggle runs, or do they let you use your pistol in there?
No, we've done all three in the jungle before.
Oh, nice.
It's like just because it's how it was. There's some birds, and they just have it set up so it's safe. But there's a shotgun only match in Saginaw Haver Memorial. That's, I think it's usually like 8 stages or something like that, and there's usually a lot of jungle runs for that one.
Right. I actually saw after Nationals, I think a couple weeks after Nationals, I think it's Forest Lake is doing a shotgun only match.
They're a lot of fun.
I want to do one, but I can't make it back up there 2 weeks after going there for Nationals. So
I just wish I could have an open shotgun.
Yeah.
There's still some decent open shotguns you can get in Canada. It's just they're the bullpups with pump action mags, and they need a lot of care and attention to run properly. And
so it'd be like those distant arm ones. But just after watching them shoot, it's like I couldn't have a bullpup pump action. You couldn't compete with them anyways.
Yeah. No, but you can get a bullpup semi-auto and run pump action mags in it.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I some reason I hate bullpups. I don't like them at all.
Oh, so do I.
Me too.
Although, Kyle, you wouldn't like my shotgun, so I run a Versamax.
Yeah. You must have one of the odd ones that run.
Actually, I run one, my wife runs one, and we have a spare, and zero issues with it.
Right on.
I'd rather have a Versamax than like a Mossberg 930 or 940 or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that goes without saying.
Yeah.
I think that's about it for me. What about you, Adriel?
What have I been up to? I went to the range. I shot the Raven and the 300 Blackout. Really decent accuracy from both of them. With the 300 Blackout, the bullets aren't coming very fast out of this thing. It's a short barrel, right? I was hitting at 200. No problem. Not even that much drop. So I zeroed at 50. I got 100-yard hits. I got 200-yard hits. This thing is going to take a deer this year, this tiny little guy. I tried a couple of different loadings in it, 110 grain, 125, and then my favorite, not for hunting, but just the favorite to shoot and reload, a 180 grain subsonic.
Nice.
Because reloading, now that I've trimmed the brass and all that kind of stuff, this is a bolt action. So I don't eject my brass onto the grass. I just go like this. It goes out onto the table and I can reuse them, right? So, yes, some of these are crimped 223 or even 300 Blackout, like crimped primer pockets, but it doesn't matter. Once I get it out, I can reuse the case. Primer, I'm using that Gen X stuff, so it's cheap. It's like 80 cents per kind of the thing. Powder, in a subsonic, I'm using 8 grains of Lil Gun in this. And then the bullets, I've had these bullets for, I don't know, 10 years.
I haven't heard of that little gun. That must be some hot powder. You're only running 8 grains in there?
Well, I can't go faster than 1,000 feet a second or I'm supersonic, right?
Yeah, that's true.
If I run my 110s in it, I'm running like 20 grains, somewhere around there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And there's a 180 grain subsonic somewhere on my floor now. But so... Think about the cost on these. Okay, the bullets are the real cost, but I bought those 10 years ago and I've just been sitting on them. The brass is reused, the primers are cheap, and the powder, 8 grains. That's a cheap rifle round to make.
Yeah.
And they're fun. They're like, I didn't try it without hearing protection on. I'd imagine they're not hearing safe because it's a short barrel. Yeah. But it's not loud. Like when you fire it,
you wouldn't get the crack. They're still not hearing safe, but you won't get that crack.
And Lil Gun's a pretty fast burning powder. It's like you'd use it in 44 Magnum, like the 44 Magnum pistol kind of a thing. Okay. So run out of a 10.5-inch barrel, like it is burning all the way in there, and it's not super loud. So
now, if only the government cared about your hearing as much as you do, and let you put a device on there so it is hearing safe.
Just take this little thing off here and put something else on there. Yeah. I wish. But we're in Canada, so no such luck. Anyways, great. Now, shooting the subsonics at 200, not happy.
Like, not how with much that one drop is on that one.
lots. Yeah. I don't know. Like I was aiming, and I think it was about 2 meters or something like that. Of just like, and that's zeroed at 50. Still dropping.
Wow.
2 meters. Yeah. Yeah. I don't. Well,
you're going from 20 grains to 8 grains of powder.
Yeah. Yeah. And the speed difference is palpable in there. But fun, but tons of fun. Tons.
So
of
how fast are your normal rounds going then?
I don't know, because the reloading data I have is for a 16 inch barrel, and I'm using a 10. So I'm going to get less velocity out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I should find out, because maybe I could put more grains in that subsonic.
Yeah.
You know what I should do? I should ladder it up until I start hearing cracks. And then that's my cutoff point. I go just a little bit lower than that.
Yeah.
Because I'm probably still well below subsonic with the 8 grains I got in there. If I cared. I don't care. I already have like 60 rounds of this stuff of the subsonic, and I've got 150 rounds of the other stuff. I really liked reloading the 300 blackout. So with the 223, I felt like I was wasting my time. With a 300 blackout, it was a lot easier. And because it's bolt action and not semi, I get all my cases back. So it didn't feel like, what's that?
300 blackout, that works in 223 mags, right? All like 223
mags? Yes.
I got ideas.
But so yeah, that's what I'm running right here. Now what I've done is I've labeled this one for inner blackout. There's no changes to it, but that's because I don't want to run that in my 223 rifles and explode them, because that's what it'll do. Turner blackout in a 223 will fuck your shit up immediately. It's not even a question. It will chamber some of the, like if you load it with the bullet really far out, it won't chamber. But if you load it with the bullet compacted in there, oh, it'll chamber, and it will blow up your 223 rifle.
And yeah,
one shot.
I just thought of it. Yeah, it would work because it's just a cut down 223 case. So
yep, yeah. Yep. Just a tube.
I got that ridiculous build I'm working on, and it might end up being a 300 blackout pistol curry handle quad stack mag gun.
I've been hearing a lot of, so what's his name, Grand Thumb, just put a video out on the 300 blackout just recently here, and like his thing was like, oh well, it sucks, it's worse than 5.56 for everything except for, you know, shooting suppressed.
Well, that's what it was built for. It was room clearing suppressed.
yeah you're on the 200 grain projectiles, and that way you get a little bit more mass, a little bit more energy, and you still run them suppressed, and yeah, it's nice and quiet and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So the only thing different I would need is the barrel.
That's cheap. You can get a barrel for $100.
I got to buy a barrel for it anyways. So.
Yeah. Looks like you have a date with some 300 blackout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And my accuracy at 50 with the 1X was like, I was getting like an inch, half an inch of groups with the 1X scope at 50. So good enough. Good enough. That's it. I only intended to take a 50-yard shot at a deer with it anyways. Maybe 100, and I'm good for both of those. So I will. I'm probably going to shoot a bunch more though, because it's just so much fun and it's so cheap to shoot. So I might take it out to the farm, and I don't know. Maybe I'll shoot some gophers or something like that with it. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I also took the Raven out. I finally got my rage cert, and I went to the range and I shot my Raven. So. Just a reminder, this is using my fancy barrel bolts. Like it's just using a bunch of my AR parts in here. And it was fantastic. I ran my H2 buffer in here and it cycled just fine.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave it in there. Nice and soft recoil with the H2 because it's a little bit heavier, cycles a little bit, more reliably. Yeah, no, it was great. The only thing that, I got really good accuracy, and you know what? New receiver, new red dot, put them on there. I shot, I'm on paper.
Nice. Oh,
6 clicks, I'm zeroed. It was like, it was that quick, that easy. So easy.
Nice.
Yeah. So shot it at 50, got it like zeroed on paper at 50. Took it out to the long range to 200 and 300, making hits, really nice. Firing. Look over. My side charging handle is no longer on the rifle. They're just a broken screw in there that's remaining from the side charge. So it broke at some point when I was shooting it. I didn't abuse it or anything like that. It just broke. And this is 30 rounds in. So it must have been a bad charging handle. It must have been like bad.
Yeah, same issue as what the WKs were having.
Yeah.
And but looking at what you replaced, well, I was going to say, you're probably going to talk about what you replaced that with.
You're just jealous, right? You're like, oh,
no, man, no. You know what's funny is one I borrowed was the exact same thing.
Yeah, so there's my new side charging handle for now. It's a screw. Yeah, it's a screw.
So is that quarter inch then? Or close to quarter inch?
I don't know. I just rooted around in my
screw. One of Spectre's charging handles, like looking what you replace that with, wonder if one of Spectre's charging handles for the WK would fit in that.
That's just a screw with a 3D printed little nubby, and I can 3D print the nubby if I want to. And I thought about it, but rather than designing it, I decided to put some fuel hose on it and grip tape just for like a little bit more extra grip on there.
Well, the fuel hose is a little bit softer than just solid plastic, so a little more tactile.
Yeah, it grabs on there really nicely, right? And the grip tape, it really hangs on to your finger. So I filled in a ticket at Lockhart yesterday. There's one in the mail today, so he's sent out a new charging handle for it. So
nice.
I think I'm going to keep that one as a spare. I'm going to leave this one on here just in case. And I also ordered a top charging handle from Wizard Defense. They're like making knockoffs in China
Your backup while you're out on the range.
No, once I've got the rear charging handle, the side's going to come out.
Really?
I'll just use the rear charger. Well, I have both. I guess you could have both on
I
there.
I so much prefer that left-hand charger. Yeah.
I've been shooting with one for 4 years, so I'm kind of used to it as well.
I like it so much more than top charge. Like, I'm going top charge now with the AR, and I miss left-side charge handle.
Huh. Okay. Food for thought. Maybe I'll put both in because I can have both in there, and the side charge is easier to hit, although I have a bolt release here, and like I didn't notice that it was off for like it could have came off anywhere in my string of 40 rounds or something like that by the time I noticed it, because I was hitting the ping pong paddle on the side to drop the bolt.
Right.
I was like firing, reload, hit the ping pong paddle, go, keep going. So it could have broken like anywhere in there. And I don't really need the charging handle for much other than just getting it going and stoppages, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took my side charging handle off of my Raven.
Hmm. Downside to having it on is if you're shooting with like lots of shit around you, like if you're going through a car window or something like that, and that side charger starts hitting the car window or the side or something like that, inducing stoppages, possible. Not very often.
No. I can't see. Yeah, it's just for working when you're out on a stage, like a top charge, you pretty much got to come out of your shoulder. Otherwise, you're punching yourself in the face or whatever. You basically got to come out of your shoulder for the top charge. That side charge, you can keep it in your shoulder and function it.
Yeah, you do have to remove your face. If you're going to grab that the top charger and bring it back, you are going to hit your face. But whereas a side charge,
to keep your position better with the side charge.
Hmm. Yeah. Or are you slap the ping pong paddle on the side there?
Yeah, I found I haven't had to actually use my side charge very much during a stage.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a shell deflector on yours?
I do, yeah.
I have one on mine. Great. Like we're super reliable, like 1:30, 2 o'clock ejection pattern for everything. Great.
When I bought a first gen and they didn't have them at the time. And I shot a tactile games, and the guy beside me got burned all over his neck because it was flying right on him.
That's his problem.
Yeah. Okay, it was a friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not got afterwards.
I got the 3D printed version there, and it seemed fine. But the side charger broke, but everything else was great. The accuracy was great. There were zero stoppages of any kind, which I like to see. It shot. I have some XM193 and I have some M855. They're both making hits at every distance I was shooting. So good enough. So That was a Raven. Yeah, and like I said, the new charging handle's on the way already. I got, you know, I haven't touched my 303 project in probably a year, maybe more. And I finally thought, you know what? I should take a look and see what I got to do to finish this. I went to the gun show. I got those parts I was missing a month or two or three ago, something like that.
Yeah.
So maybe I should finish this. And I took a look and I had to sand one part and that's it. I forgot. I'm like, you know, I need all these parts. I'll just like shelf this for a bit. And it just stayed and I just didn't want to work on it. When I looked at it, I'm like, oh, is that all I need to do? I sand the one part. Okay, it fits fine. And now I've got the third coat of boiled linseed oil on it. And that's just curing right now. So I might put a couple more coats on just to make it really nice. And otherwise, it's ready. I don't know why I waited so long. Yeah. I was just talking about this with Kyle just before we started here, but I've been testing more of that. My 3D printed ELS stuff, and I kind of I wanted to torture test it to see like how much it takes to break it. So this is the worst case scenario I could think of. Is it's on a tech lock, it's screwed onto a tech lock, and it's way offset on this rifle mag pouch, and then I laid down on top of it and it hurt. It's like pressing into your back as you're putting all your weight on it. It was not comfortable. It didn't snap. It didn't break. It's fine. So I think I'm good to go. I think I'm fine.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to print. Well, I have been printing a crap load more of them. I've got like six or eight of these forks over here, and I'm going to stick them on everything. I've got those M1 Garand pouches. I'm going to put those on there. The little mag pouches for those. No, clip pouches. Clip pouches for the M1 Garand. And I've got a couple of shot shell carriers that should be here soon, so I'll put them on those. And I don't know. I was thinking about getting crazy and like I've got a dump pouch. Like I'm gonna put my dump pouch on a fucking fork. I'll fork everything. Put a fork on it. Put a fork on it. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. That's where you gotta like. If I did snuff, like I'd put like my snus in the have a little snus package on a fork carrier like that, right?
Yep.
Get that that Kydex carrier for it. This weekend I have a maple seed that I'm running in Red Deer. It looks like it's sold out, so that's good. A couple of late signups, but now it's completely sold out, and I'll be out there with two IITs that are fantastic guys. So I am well equipped for that. Let's go on to no. Let's not use that one. Let's use that one. Tony's mentioning, I would say right hand charge ping pong paddle. Yeah, if you did right hand charging, then the ping pong paddle wouldn't be in the way. Because like that, if you hit the ping pong paddle, but then that charging handle is going to come forward, right, and hit your fingers. So yeah, it is in the way. What I really want to do is, yeah, I want to make my bad lever work for that thing. And I'm going to do it because I have a MIG welder and time. So
what all gonna happen? So what do they what's so much so different on that like just like a phase five or mag pull won't work?
It's not in the same spot, so it needs to come back a little bit more.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see it is pushed forward.
I could make it go down and then I need to screw another piece in and then screw another piece over or MIG weld something on there that goes in the right spot. So
you that didn't order that.
What's that?
Sorry, you didn't order the platinum version, did you?
No, and I don't really like the platinum version bolt release. With my other buddy's rifle, it interferes with the dust cover, which doesn't seem like it works out the best. And I mean, I guess I could do that. I don't like having two. I don't like having two buttons up here though, like the mag release and the bolt release, and like just like lots of crowding. I do like the little like sweep down here with the bad lever. But you're probably right. Yeah, that would probably be the smarter idea, right?
Yeah. I don't have a dust cover, so it hasn't been an issue for me.
Hmm. What's that part cost? Raven bolt release.
Just your Ambi bolt release.
Gold upgrade kicked. Enhanced left bolt catch release. $50 just for the bolt catch, but then you need the ambi part on the other side. I don't know. I'll look at this afterwards. So I'm not wasting everyone else's time with my thoughts and dreams on this thing, but that might be a cheaper and easier way than cracking out the MIG welder and making some abomination. But I do like me an abomination. So as you saw from the side charging handle. So I kept getting, I was posting this on Discord, the Canada Guns Discord, and people kept giving me suggestions, and that's where I blued the screw to make it match so it wouldn't look weird.
I love that you went through the effort to blue the screw.
Can't make it, I mean, it's just cold redneck.
Blue. I imagine it's just cold blue.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I love cold blue. Cold blue is like magic. You have something that's all scratched up, you just wipe that on there, it's like, pff, was never there.
Yeah,
it won't last, but that's okay. What else are we going on to? Let's do upcoming events. Three gun, Kyle, do you want to do the three gun ones?
Sure. So for the month of July, you know, Saturday, July 6th, this weekend, and Chaz is having a three gun match on the 13th. Sherwood Park is having a three gun match on July 19th is the Canadian Multi-Gun Series out at Guelph Rod and Gun Club. I imagine you'll be out there, Justin.
Yeah, I'm shooting the Friday, and I'll be staffing as well.
Nice. Okay, yeah, that's a two-day match, so July 19th, 20th. And then July 20th, 21st, in Kelowna is Summer Brutality at the Joe Rich Sportsman Association. On July 27th is my MIAP3-Gun, Steve-O's retirement party. And then on the 28th, you have CDTSA 3-Gun at Milo, outside of Calgary area there. And yeah, and all of those, except for Mighty Peace 3-Gun, are all on practice score. If you do want to go to the Mighty Peace, jump onto the Mighty Peace 3-Gun Facebook page. There's a pinned post for that match. Let them know you're coming and show up. And that's a two-day match as well. That's retirement part. That is the three gun events for July.
Awesome. On to Maple Seeds. As mentioned, Red Deer Blind Man Valley. That's coming up this Saturday in Red Deer. That one's sold out. LTVFG in Frankfurt is sold out. That's July 13th. North Peace Rod and Gun Club in Fort St. John is July 14th. That one's sold out. They have one on the 15th that still has spots available. Bulkley Valley in Smithers is July 17th. GBHA Midland in Ontario, July 27th. HHGC Penetanguishene in July 28th. KTSA will do one August 1st. I should probably get that link up. Oh, we'll have to find out what the BC guys are doing there. Cornwall, August 10th. Hampton Rifle and Pistol Club in New Brunswick, August 10th. Edmonton Chaz, August 17th. And Bonnyville, August 24th. I think that's enough. If you want to take a PAL course in Edmonton, I'm running some courses July 20th and 21st, but they're getting pretty full. 20th is a PAL, 21st is an RPAL. The prestigious Algonquin Cup is back. After a long six-year hiatus, they're ready to roll. ELGC presents a Tier 2 IDPA taking place August 16th and 17th. Registration is now open on practice score. Getting into the news.
Yeah, so that's Eagle Lake Gun Club in Sundridge, Ontario.
There we go. Thank you. CGN updated their website. Did you guys notice?
No. Yeah. I.
Of course you wouldn't.
I tried to go on there, but I forget.
I think it's better, but because it's different, I don't like it.
I'm the same. I don't like not knowing when the post was first originally posted.
Yeah, because some of these, like, they necro-post some of these, and it's like, oh, well, hot July. Is that from July 2023? Who knows if that's Sweden Guns back in stock. Is that new or old? Who knows? Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, you just by glancing, you don't see if something's just been sitting there stagnant or not.
Correct. Yeah.
And how often do you see somebody post something that was 3 years old and put a common at the end.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, they revive it.
It looks cartoony. I'm looking at it right now, and it looks cartoony. I don't like it.
You know what other thing that I noticed? I think they changed the name. This is called the Canadian Gun Nuts with spaces in between and an S instead of a Z. And the title tag has the same thing, Canadian Gun Nuts. And I think it's supposed to be all one word with a Z. They changed the brand name. And I don't like it. I don't like the change. Anyways, that's new. Yeah, how do we even get equipment? Dealers, right? Oh, that's garish. Is that still a deal? Probably not. July 3rd. That still is. Bullseye North is bringing you new gun stuff. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. And they got a wide selection of guns and trending gear for any shooter. They have valid only today. The Bergera stuff is 10% off. So rifles and mags. They've got free shipping over $250. So if you buy something that's Bergera, it's going to be more than $250. And they got some fancy pants, 10/22s, and some bolt action rifles and that kind of thing. If you're looking for a lightweight, precise rifle, they got some of those. Well, that's a decent price on our 22 pistol or 22 mags as well. And that's about it. I didn't really find any other new gun stuff because normally I use CGN for that, and I hate the new thing because it's hard to tell what's new and what's not. Anywho, let's get on to our main topic. Justin, you want to talk about the Stoger class?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with how you would find the class. He's got his own website. On it in the calendar, there'll be all his classes. And you actually have to email the organizer because Ben doesn't actually organize the classes. So it's smart on his part. You're a member at a range, you can request to have him there, and then you set up everything, and he just basically shows up and does the class. The organizer supplies the targets, patches, all that kind of stuff. So it was pretty well run, pretty well, except for I thought it was a little weird that it wasn't getting an email saying, hey, you know, bring this much ammo or make sure you bring this and that. And I find out that they just had my email wrong and my wife was getting them and I wasn't. Luckily, I had brought 2,000 rounds, so I was good, and she brought 2,000 rounds.
Your wife did decide to let you know, hey, I've been getting these emails, you know.
As we were driving there, she did. But look, I've watched enough of his stuff to kind of know what to expect, so it wasn't a big deal. So it's a two-day course. I did the skills and drills class, and then he did another course after for more advanced, which we didn't do. Two was enough, and especially at $600, it gets expensive for two people each, I should say, plus hotels and everything.
Yeah.
So we drove down to Detroit for that, or just outside of Detroit. If you've watched a lot of his videos, it's what he teaches on the videos, but I don't know about you guys, but having someone there actually telling me what you should be doing and what you're doing wrong is a lot different than watching a video of that.
It's a self-analysis out of it if he's standing there watching it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and he's a good teacher. I don't want to be sugar-coated. So, if you're shooting and all of a sudden you have a mic or a no-shoot or something, he'll just look at you and be like, oh, yeah, that's disappointing. Whereas, I don't want to be like, oh, you could do better, that kind of stuff. That's not how I would want to learn. So he's actually really good at kind of pushing you to get you to be better at everything. So actually funny, we got there, supposed to start at, I think, 9:30. We get there at 9 and start talking to people that are there. And there was actually a couple other Canadians there. And he somehow managed to go to the wrong range, and he was an hour and a half away.
Oh no.
So he broke a lot of speed records and got back to the range in about an hour. So we started a little bit late. Wasn't a big deal. And he started with just fundamental drills at 5 yards, 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards, and just kind of assessed everybody. And then I think the class had 11 or no, class had 9. So it was quite small. So lots of one-on-one time. Most of the drills he would run with either 2 or 3 people, and he would just run the drill 6 times and then kind of critique everybody as they go along and patch, reload, the next group goes up. So you had lots of shooting, but also lots of input from him. So the first day was a lot of shooting. The first day was more shooting than the second day. And it was just a lot of fundamentals. Yeah, he didn't really concentrate on draw too much, which I don't think that class was meant for anyways, but it was more of movement, transitions, like simple things. Like, I had a bad habit of confirming. I'm shooting just iron sights, but confirming I have the fiber optic in my sight before shooting, whereas he's really harps on, as soon as you see a flash of, like, especially with an optic, as soon as you see a flash of red, you're pulling that trigger. Like, people are waiting too long. So it was actually quite amazing to watch him, like, transition. And, like, as soon as he swings it around, he sees a flash of red. He's pulling that trigger. It's an A zone. Obviously, a lot of us can't do exactly what he does. But it's, I'm trying to think of, so a lot of things he was harping on me about was, let's see here. Especially on a movement stage, I stand up on my last shots, so I don't keep like an athletic posture. I don't know if you guys do that too, but like I'll run over and I'll stand up for my last two, and I'm stiff as a board, So that was one thing. I'm a tall guy. Like, I'm 6'5", and I tend to have my feet too close together, so. He's really getting me to make sure I'm in an athletic stance at all times, doesn't matter what I'm doing. And actually, that's one thing I really practiced on for national or provincials, and it made a world of difference. And he's also I don't know how you guys do it, but when you're moving side to side, do you shuffle or do you cross over your feet?
I cross over.
I'd have to look at video. I don't know.
Yeah, so he was big on making sure you cross over your feet. Because you can be a lot steadier, and you can keep it just seems like it's a lot stabler for actually shooting while moving. So we did a lot of drills for just crossover while shooting and cross back while shooting back and forth. So that one actually helped a lot for me. One thing I'm bad at is I seem to keep the same cadence for. It doesn't matter what target I'm shooting. So if it's a full IFSC target, or if it's a partial, just like a partial target, I tend to keep the same cadence. So then I'm going to be throwing a few shots. So he really was on me about slowing down for the harder and confirming your shots on the partial targets. And again, that I got away from that a little bit on all the tuxedos at IFSC. So that hurt me a little bit. But he was really good at explaining on little things about what you should, where you can speed up and where you really should be slowing down. Another good one is if you go to a range, you set up a course of fire. He had us run that course of fire with a pistol, but dry 5-6 times before you ever pulled out a mag. But don't pull the trigger, but actually run and as if you were shooting it at each target. And I couldn't believe how much I learned from just doing that and not having to waste ammo. It really makes a difference for just seeing how your movement is and your transition without actually having to pull the trigger to do that. So that's something I'm trying to do. Almost like dry fire.
So now here's one I'm curious about. So you guys ran it, did a dry run multiple times, and then you guys did it live. Mm-hmm. How did the dry runs end up comparing to your live run? Time-wise, not necessarily hits, because you can't compare the hits, but time-wise.
Time-wise would be the same. He was trying to get you to run. He basically said, if you're not huffing and puffing after doing a couple dry runs, you're not going hard enough.
Right.
So he wants you to, like, full speed, like, just as if you're shooting.
but still harping on that, okay, we're doing it dry, but still focus on your sights on the gun, but as if you were shooting it. Because I know it happens to me even on like walkthroughs, and you end up air gunning it, and we're all guilty of it. We air gun faster than we're actually going to shoot the stage. So that's what I was wondering on your dry runs, if it actually worked out where, it was the same as your live run.
That's why I liked having the actual pistol out, because then you're still looking down, looking through your sights, target focus, but you're confirming your hits or what you would be your hits, not just, like you said, air gunning it and just kind of retaining your arms up and kind of not actually doing the full motion. So you're still there. You're still going to do your, pretend you're doing your splits and move on. So it's, you're trying to do it full speed, but proper. Mm-hmm. One thing he actually, I don't know if you've been watching his videos lately or not. He's been having these poles in them. So it's just like a soccer agility pole. You can stick into the ground.
Okay.
I bought a bunch of these. So instead of having to, if you're going to the range, you only have an hour. You don't want to spend the hour setting up a bunch of barrels or walls, right? You just stick these in the ground, and you just use them as your barricades. And you can put two close together as a little port to shoot through. And you can set up in a second. They're on a little bit of a spring too, so if you bump into them, it's not a big deal. They're a little bit short for me because I'm tall. But
everything's short for you.
Well, they're only 6 feet tall, right? But by the time I'm crouching down, it's not too bad. It's still good enough. But they're really quick to set up, and you can move them around really quick. It's just if you're only a lot of times I go to the range, I'm by myself. I'm only there for an hour, so I don't want to spend half of it setting up and tearing down. So they're really nice. And then, or you can grab a couple barrels too if you want a little bit more hard cover so you can't see the target. But if you watch any of his videos lately, he's been using them a lot.
I suppose at your events, the organizers have to be very specific. Sorry, the walls extend to infinity. You're not allowed to shoot over them, Justin.
And I'm the first to complain when there's a low port.
Yeah.
There's actually a provision they had that were the full out squat as far as they could go, and it just barely could see that because it was probably like maybe 18 inches off the ground. It wasn't very high at all.
Oh, wow. So,
but I'm still for that one. I'm trying to think of what else. So day two was similar stuff, less drills and more kind of working in your transitions while shooting, a little bit more movement. So he's really trying to get everybody to, get your hits as you're exiting, make sure you're starting to move as you're taking your last shots, but you obviously got to keep your targets in focus. And then he wants you to run full tilt, make sure you got your gun up a step or two before you're going to be taking it. So he was just really working on your transitions a lot, because that's where a lot of people seem to lose their time is basic transitions. You don't have your gun up ready when you're supposed to be shooting at your next position, things like that. If there's anything else.
Have you taken other shooting training? What other training courses have you taken?
I haven't. This was really my first. Most of my stuff has been either just friends or YouTube University.
So it'd be hard to compare it to like a standard fundamentals course or something like that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you got some really good one-on-one. Like I agree with you. The value in having an instructor do it is that they've seen a thousand students do what you've done. And they're like, Justin, you're over confirming.
Yeah.
They don't have to spend a lot of time looking at it. They know exactly what they're looking at, because they've seen it a million times before.
Yeah. He was very quick at picking up your things you should work on, and he explained them well too. So he was very good at explaining how you should do things. Like even his demonstrations, like you'll see in his videos, he'll do a demonstration three different ways. They're very subtle differences, but once he's like, so which one was better? And you kind of have to think about it as well, that one, the number two is better, and then he'll explain why it was better. So it's not like he just says do this, right? Like he's very good at that.
So you can self-diagnose. I think that's one other thing that you get from a course like that is maybe on YouTube someone describe like, oh yeah, if you anticipate you'll shoot low and left, but then to have someone like say, like, why do you think you're hitting low and left? And what do you think's going on here? And like work on that skill of self-evaluating where the issue is, I think is really important.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to think if there's any.
So $600 for the 2 days?
Yeah, $600 2 days, US.
Ah, that sounds about right. Yeah. I mean, like a standard course would be about $200 a day, but this is kind of like a celebrity, you know, kind of a training. And
I found I got my value out of it. I wouldn't do the course every year. Like half the people at this course, he comes every year and they do it again every single year. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would get enough out of it doing it every year. But maybe I'll try a couple of years, I'll try his next up course. I forget the name of that one. That was more of like for the top shooters. I can't remember.
That's when you're doing somersaults and you're from the Matrix, right? Handstand. Yeah. And
it's where you learn to curve the bullet.
Still working on that one. Watch lots of videos, can't quite get it.
So did you talk to the range on their experience with organizing it? You said organizing it was a little different. You found that, like, what was their experience with organizing it with Ben Lincoln? So
they do it every year, so they're pretty used to it. I think they have had him up for the last few years at least. From my understanding, it's pretty straightforward. Ben just tells them what his fee is, and then they tack on whatever the range fee is and targets and pasters and all that kind of stuff. And then they provided lunch for us too and water, snacks. So it's pretty straightforward. Like, I think he's just basically, you know, a hired gun. He just comes, here's my fee per person, pay me. And I think he finds his own way. He makes his own arrangements for hotel, all that kind of stuff. So I don't think it's really much of a big deal for them. I think he gives like a list of the amount of targets he would want. And we must have gone through like 30,000 patches or something crazy. It was a lot.
Yeah, I bet. I've done both. I've done both where the organizer, like through Maple Sea, the organizer, we handle the whole thing and we just, you know, have a bay for us and maybe some target backers and that's it.
Yeah.
All the way to the range organizes everything, not necessarily for Maple Seed, but for some other kinds of events where the range organizes everything. And then as the instructor, you just kind of like roll in and do your thing and leave and they just give you one lump sum.
Yeah.
That's preferable because the comms that you have to do with people sometimes takes quite a bit of time. And for a guy that's like traveling all across the country, sometimes you got internet. A lot of the times you don't. If you're at ranges, a lot of the ranges don't have any Wi-Fi, data, nothing. So
he's dealing with one person versus 10 people.
Yeah,
and you know, one person with maybe a couple questions versus like all of us shooters that might have 100 questions.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And especially for a range that's like really well put together. Some ranges aren't, like, they don't have that event hosting capability in-house just yet. Maybe they just aren't good at it, or maybe like they had one person who was good at it and they left and they're all volunteers and you know, it'd be hit and miss that way. But some ranges are really well put together and they really know. They're like, oh, we're going to do, like, even with something that's brand new, they just like ask for the requirements and be set up. And their BTSA struck me that way. BTSA in Calgary, they're like really well put together for events. And I remember the first time we did Maple Seed out there, I was like, holy crap, these guys like have their stuff sorted.
Yeah, no, it's definitely run pretty well. Like, other than Ben being late because he went to the wrong range, it was running pretty well. It was actually a pretty cool range. They had, it was mostly just pistol bays. Then they had a clubhouse with a full bar and restaurant. And there was skeet shooting. There was a go-kart track and a full road course car track. Nice. So when we were shooting, I was just watching like Corvettes drive around the racetrack.
Sounds like pretty a cool place to be.
Yeah.
They have a motorbike track next to the Drumheller range.
Oh, really?
Put all the noisy stuff in one spot.
Drag strip beside Madison Hat.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Anything else to mention about it? Sounds like it was worth the time.
Yeah, I think I got a lot out of it. I think my wife did too. By the end of the 2 days, she was definitely a lot more accurate with her red dot. She's still switching over and learning that, but I think she got enough out of it that it was worth the money to go. Like I said, I wouldn't go every year, but it's definitely worth to go once. You definitely want a base, though. You don't want to be going as a new shooter.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Why don't we get on to listener feedback? So we've been kind of like picking at the Facebook comments as they come up. Tony's saying BTSA is mostly a competition range. We know how to do events, I hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. On emails, Kyle, do you want to take this one from Tony?
Sure. Good evening, Slamfire Radio. Happy Canada Day. And it marks Tony's 1 year ownership of the Kodiak K9 and the number infinite time I've tried to reach Kodiak customer support. This time, there is actually a part breakage. One of the handguard screws has stripped, and I'm trying to reach out for a replacement. I will report back if they respond. Maybe I should move just to a restricted FX9. Remember the USPSA drama. The foreign membership cost in 2024 has doubled. Sounds like a CPC talking point. As Steel Challenge is a part of USPSA, we're seeing a significant reduction in participation. The 2024 Steel Challenge Canadian Nationals might be our last one for a while. I promise this is not hunger marketing. To repeat, the Nationals will be hosted by BTSA. July 13th, 14th spots are still available. Registration on Pratt Score. See you there. Best regards, Tony.
So USPSA in Canada like keeps registration with USPSA in the US?
I don't think there is a USPSA Canada. There is just USPSA.
But like Canadians keep membership for Steel Challenge in Canada?
Yes. If you want to get classification or something.
Why?
Yeah.
It's a standard course of fire that anyone can do with a standard set of targets. Why bother with the USPSA part?
Because the only thing I can think of is same as on the sporting clay side with NSCA. There are certain people who are registered targets as NSCA because they want that classification because they travel, and when they go down to the States to compete against the rest of the States and like a national event or something, they got a classification instead of, well, and plus on those big matches, actually, that could be another thing too. Actually, anything over a level one match, you need to be a member. So if you're putting on like a level two or level three match, which I imagine their nationals class is at least a level two, if not a level three match, you have to be a member too.
But like, is there anything proprietary about Steel Challenge? Is the name trademarked?
Probably. Yes.
Definitely. Yeah, probably. Considering USPSA is trying to trademark hip factor scoring.
Yes.
Well, I'm thinking like, why couldn't, like, not necessarily outlaw, but like Steel Challenge doesn't have a lot of rules.
Okay. Also, look at the difference between on participation on like three gun outlaw versus IPSC. IPSC has a much higher people like the legitimacy of an organization as well, right?
People like to get raves and see how they're doing against other people and compare and compete.
But couldn't every match has ranking on it, and then you could just take a look at the thing. What's a B-class shooter do this whole thing in? They do it in this many seconds. Okay.
Well, yeah, that'd be good for your personal gratification. But if you, like Tony's saying, if you want to go to World Speed Shoot or something, a big match in the States or something, then you're going to need a sanctioned match to get a classifications to go down there. Otherwise, unless you're a grandmaster, you're competing. You're not going to have a chance of winning anything because you're not going to be properly classified.
I guess.
Wait. That's the thing. If it's not a sanctioned match, you're not going to get a classification. So then when you go to a sanctioned match, it's like you're unclassified, so you're overall.
But I think classification is just like an ego stroke. It's not actually like, it's not needed for anything. All it is like, you're the best of D tier. And like, what does that mean? Oh, maybe you're going to move up to C tier. Who gives a shit about any of this stuff? None of this stuff matters.
There are people out there who do care, though.
They only care because they think it's a thing and it's really not a thing. It doesn't matter if you're the top of D or the bottom of C. None of this means anything. You take a look at, like, Justin, when he came on and he mentioned his latest one that he was in, and he said 16th in production, that means something. Everyone in production is all competing on the same level based on equipment, not based on they're kind of an okay shooter, but they had a really good day. I don't think, that makes sense in golf, but golf isn't a real sport, so I don't know.
Well, even for it's like, I'm classified as a B shooter, but that's because I don't care to go do a classification to try and up myself. I'm sure I'm probably an A or so. Who cares, though?
Yeah, you show up to a match where they're, like, giving out trophies based on division. It's like, oh, it took the top of B again. Well, sucks to be you guys, right? Yeah. What would it take to just say, like, we're going to do a Canada Steel Challenge now, and we're just going to put everyone in this spreadsheet, and you all get classified, and you got to pay, I don't know, $1 per match, but you do everything. We just have this, like, database. Just get $1 per person.
You'd have to change the name, because I guarantee you they'll be suing you.
It's the Metal Match. It's not the Steel Challenge. It's the Metal Match. We use all the same targets.
Ferris Metal Match.
Sorry, I think I took us, like, way off topic there for just. But, like, what's their fee? What's a fee per match on one of those things, or per person? Right, $3, $4, $2.
I can't remember what it is. I could probably figure it out. But our last USPSA match for one classifier stage, we had maybe 15, 20 shooters out, I think. No, we had like 15 shooters. And our club paid like $40
total?
Yep. To register the scores from one classifier stage. So that's not an entire, that's not a whole Steel Challenge match. That's one classifier for USPSA.
It's like $2.50.
So like $2-3 or something like that. Yeah.
$1 to USPSA per gun. That's not that bad. If you don't have to manage the stats and the website and that kind of crap, like, that's fine.
Well, nobody does that.
What's that?
Said nobody does that.
Well, Tony's saying it's $1 to USPSA per gun.
But you were saying managing the stats and everything. If you didn't have to,
I said I'm assuming service for money. Yes, that is.
You
what
remember
I'm
my classification debacle?
Yeah. So I suppose my medal match will actually put the stats in for the dollar.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that is proprietary and trademarked and whatnot. I bet you not very much.
Yeah.
Anywho. Did you get through all the whole email before I interrupted and took us, like, way off?
Yes, that was the entire email. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad. you usually take YouTube comments. Why don't I take them this week, just so we'll change it up a little bit.
Okay.
The latest comment was from Thomas saying, "Nice seeing Brian again," with a Y in there. Mark said, "Love having Canadian Gun Talk. It's nice to change. Keep up good work." Tony mentioned, "Does Kelly load for her sub-gauge shotguns yet?" I think she loaded for the 28.
They were loading for the 28 a while back.
Yeah. Fun fact, I was looking this up recently. Dick Cheney shot that guy with a 28 gauge.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. He says, okay, I have problems with the whole stats. So I'm going to another squirrel moment here. Dick Cheney, okay, supposedly this other guy goes downrange to collect his bird. Another bird comes up. Dick Cheney, you know, blasts his buddy with this 28 gauge at 25 yards with 7.5 shot. Okay. This guy's peppered pretty good. He had a mini heart attack because one of those lead pellets ended up in his heart like two, three days later. Do you guys really think he was at 25 yards with a 28 gauge and 7.5 shot? I would never, ever think that 28 gauge pellets are going to get in and break and get into a vein or an artery or something like that from 25 yards. I don't believe it at all. It's not enough.
I have a hard time believing it.
7.5? I don't think so.
That is pretty deep penetration to get into the heart.
Even if it got you in the neck up here and it went through like through an artery, like you'd have to like maybe if the dude was like 90 and he had like that paper thin old person skin and it just like skipped on through to his artery, his carotid or something.
There we go. We need to get some ballistics gel. Go to 25 yards.
I don't think it's deadly.
I have a hard time believing it penetrates that deep at that range.
I don't think so. Like maybe 10, maybe 5. Like you got to be close for 7.5 to do that kind of damage.
I would believe.
And they left all the pellets. They left them all. They're like, nah.
It's not worth cutting them open to pull them out.
Well, you think like, boy, what a torturous journey that would be pulling out 7.5 pellets. Like,
yeah. See, little guy. Well, at least it's 28, so there's not that many of them.
7.5 pellets. Oh,
versus like 9 or 8 or something.
Oh, 9 or 8, there'd be more. Yeah.
Anyway. I guess my question would be, how far away would you be shooting a duck?
I think. Well, were they doing duck? They couldn't have been with lead. Like, it had to have been dove. Or I thought it was dove. Yeah.
So how far away?
I don't know what it was. I'm just thinking, like from the sounds of it, that sounds very typical to dove shooting. They just surround a field and just everyone shooting everywhere. I was watching. It was on
Quail Hunt.
Meat Eater.
It was a Quail Hunt.
Oh, it was a Quail Hunt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would you think would it be lethal at 25 for a quail?
Quail, you end up getting to pretty close to like.
Yeah, maybe like a wow. What kind of choke? No, you couldn't run a full choke.
Why not?
You wouldn't be running a full choke. You'd want like a mod or something like that because it's gonna.
If you were going to be shooting something at distance, why wouldn't you run a full?
I'm saying you probably wouldn't be running a full choke if you're quail hunting because it's going to flush closer to you. So you'd want like a mod or something like that. A full would be great, but like for a longer range shot. A collapsed lung, a non-fatal heart attack, an atrial fibrillation. That's like, I can't see how that would happen.
So we need ballistics gel at 25 yards and we need to test it.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, even the cheap... Amazon ballistics gel, just something.
Anywho, where the hell was I before it? I was on YouTube comments.
Yeah, that was after Kelly loading for sub for
sub shotguns. There, Tony said interested to see the Raven 223 silver package. Should be similar to a forged AR. To be honest, not a huge fan of the billet cool cuts look, except for the ambi safety. I don't really need anything else to be ambi. Okay, that Raven silver, the magwell looks like shit on it though.
Yeah.
It looks terrible. It's like slab sided. It looks way off on the gun. So yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not really like, I don't think you need like all these little like grooves and all that kind of cuts in there, all that kind of thing. But,
those are lightning cuts.
Lightning cuts. They're lightning cuts. Look at all those cuts. But the silver looks terrible. the magwell looks, it looks like they purposefully made it look like crap, which I guess they did because
they want to encourage buying the more expensive one.
Yeah. Tony says, pretty much took my Lee Loadmaster apart. The first thing I got it secondhand, took out all the linkages. It was running the old school yellow turning brown grease. Cleaned it all up, replaced it with modern red automotive grease. I hope it was, what's that, red and sticky? Sticky and tacky? Whatever that red stuff is, got to use that. And torqued up all the bolts. The red grease is relatively odorless. I have some of that too, but I didn't want to use it because I have lots of that, and that's for my trailer. The benefit of a larger press, you get grease fittings, and I would top that up with a grease gun every 3,000 rounds, which is the standard maintenance schedule for the Loadmaster. Really? Re-grease 3,000? Every 3,000 rounds? Well, that seems low.
Yeah.
I have done, 30 or 40,000 on that Dylan, I guess, somewhere around
there.
Yeah,
I was probably close to that. I'm like, oh, I should probably lube this thing.
Tony's saying PLA would bend over time under load and then get soft under medium high heat, reachable in the summer times. Yeah, I agree. I think like
and
PLA,
it wouldn't even take much time to bend and loosen up at all.
Yeah, I think if it was sitting on your belt, like if you had this sitting on your belt and it wasn't white, it was black, and it started to get hot, it would start to sag and start to, you know, move. Tony says, I missed PCC Nationals as there wasn't a black badge available that early in the season around Calgary. Maybe next year. The next time. Your Cabela's affiliate link under support the show seems to work, but it's missing from the page from each individual episode. Yeah, I got to re-add it. That is working again. Oh man, couldn't Kyle have left his firearm in storage instead of surrendering it? I thought I read there was a one-way export clause in that OIC. Well, there's one other thing that Kyle could have done.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this, but I'll address the export clause for the OIC. Yeah, Canada will let whatever leave the country. They don't care. But U.S., you cannot permanently import into the U.S. an AR lower, which is what they ended up surrendering.
They have enough. They don't need any more.
Yeah. Basically, once an AR leaves the U.S., it ain't coming back. So as far as other stuff, I could have left. We were talking. I didn't think of it at the time, and to be honest, I wasn't too concerned about it because it was a lower. That's it.
Lowers are like $80, right?
Yeah. So yeah, I could have left it, you know, at my dad's place or something, or I could have sold it to a business, a firearms business,
friendly FBO. Yeah.
So, yes, there are options.
Yeah, IBI has a new owner. Who's that? I don't know. They just have a new owner. Sorry, Eddie. No specifics on that.
Yeah, I read the post. It almost looks like Ryan is still like heading it up involved. Ryan's it might have been just a different management group or something, or new investors or something. I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah, Ryan's still there though. Ouch, Brian, that sucks. Really leaving mags at home. I have a habit of leaving an empty mag in all my mag-fed firearms to avoid that issue. I don't like leaving mags in firearms because I don't know if they're loaded or not. So when I know that when the mag's out, it's just one fewer thing. I guess I leave a mag in my 303 though. Anything where it's like semi-fixed or I don't really want to take it out.
Yeah.
And I leave the mag in the 300 blackout because that's the one that stays in there. And I have a fear of
mixed up.
Yeah, I don't want to put that ammo in my 223.
Throw a couple 223 and run it in 223, and
I think it would run 223. Like I could put 223 through my 300 blackout just fine.
Yes, but you can grab a mag, throw 223, and throw it in your Raven and decide to mag dump.
Yeah,
because then it would just dump everything.
It'll stop.
Yeah.
It'll stop. Yeah. Let's see. And I think that's all of it. Spotify. Kyle, you want to take that one?
Sure. Yeah. So apparently they're on every episode on Spotify, there's a automatic Q&A, what you thought about the episode. And somebody actually filled that out. It was from Vagrant Viking. And this was on last week's episode. He said, great episode. I would love to see Dustin become a new host.
Instagram, Facebook, Discord. I think I grabbed everything off Discord. I'm pretty sure I grabbed everything off Discord. I've been posting photos of my 303 rebuild and how the BLO has been going over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well as like pretty much everything else we can. So check that out if you want to. What people bought from our Cabela's link. I guess we'll have to put that link back up on every episode. Thanks to our supporters on Patreon and Player. If you'd like to support us, head on over there. If you'd like to email the show, send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com or comment on one of those social media platforms. Shout outs, Kyle?
No, not really, actually. Not this week. Actually, yeah, I will shout out Trevor. He's the one guy who showed up on Saturday, even though he looked at the registration and figured it was going to be canceled, he still showed up just in case. And I thanked him very much for that. And he said he'll keep showing up anyways, just to make sure that there's at least somebody there showing interest. So shout out to him.
Cool. Justin?
I'm going to shout out Tom and Brian who helped me run all my co-workers because there's seven, so I couldn't do it by myself. And shout out to Chip for running the 3-gun match in Michigan last weekend because he's supposed to be retired from running matches, but he still decided to throw one, and it was awesome. He always does really good matches.
Fantastic. And for my shout out, Justin, thanks for coming on and talking with us about the Ben Stoker class.
Thank you.
Finally, join our Discord server, watch us on Facebook, YouTube, and Player. Join the CCFR, and we'll see you next week. Later, everyone.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.